You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Simon Fraser University in Burnaby, British Columbia. We strive to provide perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media. If you'd like to know more about us, check out our website at cjsf.ca.
Welcome to Teachings in the Air. Welcome to Teachings in the Air podcast with Jerry Oldman. Coming to you from Hunkaminam territory with a podcast series about Indigenous men's health and wellness. We aim to inspire, motivate, and empower Indigenous men to be sound in mind, body, and spirit, because that's what health means.
Hello, this is Teachings in the Air with Jerry Oldman. Today's podcast is called Sahilthit, Shut Up and Paddle. It's been in my mind for a long time to do this podcast, and I've done it over and over again. You know, because I like everybody else, I sit and watch what goes on in the world. And I get influenced by influencers, by people on Twitter and Instagram, on the news, you know, and I watch what goes on in regards to politics, to climate change, to the environmental issues, Indigenous issues. I've been watching that practically all my life. And I'm reminded, as I was thinking of this podcast, of my cousin, my late cousin, telling me, Jerry, you quit being a worrier now. Be a warrior. He would say that because he'd see me worrying about residential school survivors, see me worrying about children being taken, children unsafe in our communities, worrying about suicide and addictions. And that's when he told me, you stop that. You be a warrior now, Jerry. So I took those words and in a way he's telling me, shut up and paddle. I tell people, in my life, I used to be king of the complainers. Complaining about the church, complaining about the government, complaining that, about the theft of land, the theft of children, the theft of language. There was so much that was just justifiably so for me to complain. And say somebody should do something about this. Then one day I seen the statement. And this person was saying somebody should do something, then they realized they're somebody. Today I know I'm somebody, so I'm doing something. And part of that is these podcasts, contributing to the process of change in this country, change in the people. And, it gets conflicting and it gets confusing, to what to do. Another one of my teachers was an elder. Seeing how I reacted around racism and around people, that wouldn't treat me with respect or not believe in me. And he said to me, Jerry, every time somebody steps on you, if you don't make noise, they're going to keep stepping on you. So I mulled that over. And I realized that I must make respectful noise. Because the man that told me was so respectful. of all humanity, all human beings. So I said, okay, I'll follow my elder. Another one, a message of shut up and paddle, come from this elder at this morally, at this healer's gathering. I think it was 1979, somewhere in there. And I remember I got this little bundle of tobacco and a red cloth. And it's an invitation to this healing gathering in Morley, Alberta. And this is your invitation. Please pass it on to someone else. So I passed on that little tobacco bundle to some of my friends and said, hey, it's an invitation to a healing gathering. And holy cow. Just in my own nation, there was quite a few of us that gathered up and went to Morley, Alberta to listen to the healers, to be part of ceremony. Because that was, you know, in a sense, following that prophecy of about the moon and the landing on the moon, that the indigenous people are going to wake up when mother touches grandmother or when the earth touches the moon. That we're going to start to go back to our ceremonies, to our language, to our, you know, to our culture. It's a big shut up and paddle message. You know, embrace your culture, embrace your heritage, practice it, live it. Anyway, this elder, we're gathered around the fire, Morley, Alberta. And his message to us, because we all smudge and listen to music, traditional hand drum music, before he speaks. And he says, I want all of you to start working with the white people. And we're young activists and, you know, and wanting to be activists. I'd already been part of blockades and things, you know, and demonstrations. And my mind, I'm saying, why should I work with white people? I don't want to. I got enough work with my own people. Then he says, like he's reading my mind, he says, I'm going to tell you why. He says, because the white nations have the gift of movement. They're not afraid to pull up roots and move to another country, to move across the ocean. It's been proven over and over again that they got no problem moving around. He says, they even went to the moon. He points up to the sky. That's a clear indication of their gift of movement. But he says they're getting reckless with that gift. They're causing harm with that gift. And the reason why I want you to go work with those ones is because we as indigenous people have the gift of vision. We could see what happens if we overfish or we overhunt or if we don't take care of the land or each other. That there's going to be harm, there's going to be damage. There's going to be hunger. There's going to be hardship. So we must bring that gift of vision to them. I was thinking those elders already seen what was coming with the climate change and the global warming and attributed it to the gift of movement, of moving without regard, moving without vision, moving without a long-term vision. So that was another message of shut up and paddle. Just don't be a complainer. So as I was coming up to doing this podcast, I'd think about people telling me, I'd tell them about my anger. And these are white folks. About my depression, about my fear and anxiety because of what happened to me at residential school and what happened to me as an indigenous person in this country. And they'd say, Jerry, you have a right that's justifiable that you be that way. And I thought, yes, but I don't like being the way I am. Angry all the time, afraid, depressed. Because that's what happened. That's where I arrived at after the harm. All victims, if they don't get healing, they walk through life angry, depressed, or afraid. And that's not a way to be. Because the indigenous way is not to complain, to show huge respect to your fellow human beings, to show respect to everything that keeps you alive, the deer, the moose, the salmon, the winged ones, you know, the ones that crawl, the ones that grow out of the ground, the water, the air, to have respect for that. That's an indigenous way. And I think of it, I would meditate on that word respect. How do I show respect to another human being? And one of the answers that come to me was the highest form of respect I can give another human is to listen to them with everything I got. Not to be thinking about my response or thinking that they're wrong or thinking that they're right. Just listen. I started to practice that, and it was difficult because my mind chatter, you know, my mind talk would want to take over. In that way of life, I was letting my emotions set my path. And when I was angry, it wasn't a good path. It wasn't a healthy path, trail to walk on. You know, so our values were to find solutions, to put our minds together. You've probably heard me refer to the famous, world-famous philosopher saying, let's put our minds together to see what we can do for our children, and that was Chief Sitting Bull. Let's put our minds together. It's another message about shut up and paddle. You know, why I became a complainer, why I remained a victim. Because remember, victims, the word victim, actually, I looked up the meaning. It come from the time and, there were people in, around what they now call Israel or the Middle East, that they would make sacrifices to the God, sacrifice lambs, animals. And those animals were called victims. So I don't want to be a sacrifice to anyone. I discovered that I don't want to be a victim. Because victims wrap themselves in a cocoon of negativity, usually. There are times that anger can be righteous anger, and we can go out and we can say no to abuse, no to oppression, in a way that it can bring change. Because we've been saying no for many years as indigenous people. In both ways, some of us go out and blockade, some of us write letters, some of us do emails, make phone calls, confront people. And I think of Elijah Harper sitting in the House of Government with his eagle feather saying no. A real good example of someone that's paddling, that has a mission and has an objective and is clear and would not be swayed by anyone. We stay true to the course. So I became that victim because I did not receive healing for what happened to me in the education system, Canadian education system. You know, the physical abuse, the mental abuse, from adults, the sexual abuse. It was, I end up being insecure, being angry, being depressed, being afraid. You know, But, as, you know, I wanted to make it clear it wasn't 24/7. There were many beautiful moments in my life, too. As I was evolving from the victimhood. And that's what, of course, would keep me going. Like my my late grandmother talking to me. Or my elders role modeling for me. You know, and I could hear Askwashachut. Don't think you're better than others. Askwashakal Kalut. Don't you be swearing at people. You know, I'd hear those words, you know. But to absorb them so I reflect them, it took a while. Because in a way they're telling me to shut up and paddle. It's not indigenous to be a complainer or a whiner. You know, I heard those words. There's no room for whiners and complainers here. One of the elders said, we're here to find solutions. We're here to find answers to our own personal problems and the problems of our families and communities. That was a good message for me to hear. Because when I think about that word justifiable, it's so true. I've talked about when I figured out why we are where we are today, because we must be honest, many of our people are suffering. You know, from ill health, from mental health, from, you know, from depression and anxiety, poverty. You know, you just look at government reports and what they call determinants. And we're way above other people in numbers, even though we're a small percent of the population. 40% of the prisons, indigenous. Diabetics, suicide, addictions. You know, that's true. Apprehensions. But it's because of what happened. And we're not born to be that way as indigenous people. It's all of those happenings, and anyone in the world that would go through those events and live through them would be impacted too. In other parts of the world, when they've done what they've done to us, they became terrorists. They fought back that way. I watched that, and it doesn't seem to end. So, and I think in my own mind that that's not the solution. Violence is not the solution. Aggression, because aggression means that you're going to push yourself in someone with the intention of causing harm. Whether it be with words, a look, or a fist, or a policy, or a law, that's aggression. I tell people, you know, we can't fight fire with fire. If we do that, everybody gets burnt. Everybody. Kids, adults, doesn't matter. You know, and that's what I go by is my life. Not systemic reviews or things. I do make references to history. But for me to be the victim, until I broke that victimhood, you know, I wasn't paddling. I wasn't part of a solution. In fact, I was part of the problem. So, you know, and I look back, you know, and I tell people I grew up in a house that was small, built by my dad. And people helped him from the family. But built it on his own. And we all slept upstairs underneath the roof. Line of beds, no bedrooms. One big room downstairs. There's a kitchen stove and there's a heater stove. Two stoves, two wood stoves. And that's where we lived. And it was an inclusive way of life. And I have no bad memories of it. You know, we were all we're all part of that family and we all work together. My brothers and I feed the chickens, you know, do the chores, you know, pack wood, pack water, you know, help be part of the family. With those little memories in my little childhood, there was laughter. There was support. There was encouragement. In such a small space. And I, you know, that's where I heard the stories. That's where I was given responsibility. And I responded. For some reason, my dad picked me to be the fire starter in the morning, in the winter time. Because our houses didn't have Tyvek and asbestos stuff to insulate the houses. It was such a small piece of space, it was easier to heat up, I guess. But I know, I remember they put newspaper between the shingles and the wall to stop the airflow. So when I think about it, there's no mold there, you know. But anyway, I'd be, you know, my dad slept closest to the stair, my dad and my mother. Then my oldest brothers that went down in age, and I was second last. I have one younger brother than me at that time. So I was second last in the line of mattresses and beds. In the morning, you know, my dad was a logger. He was always a worker, working all the time, you know. And I'd hear him early in the morning, "Jerry, Spamsham." And I'd roll over and cover my head with a blanket. "Jerry, Spamsham." And I wouldn't move, and he'd say it one more time and change the tone of his voice. And I would jump out of bed, run down towards the stairs and down the stairs to the wood heater. There's kindling there and wood to start the fire. I put it all in and I start the fire. And I run back upstairs, go back into my blankets till it warms up. You know, that was a responsibility. And it got to be my habit after to wake up early. And I still do. But that was an inclusive lifestyle where we all had something to do. No standing around. When people are working, we had to become involved. Berry picking, canning the food, drying the fish, whatever it was, we all become part of it. And, you know, that's a good way of life. When I think about that, was good. Oh, I remember us playing. And my parents would go shopping somewhere, and they'd get my granny or my uncle to babysit us. And that was storytelling time, you know, and it was special snack time in the evening or whatever. That was good. You know, I grew up in a reservation. I didn't think there was anything wrong, you know, until I grew up and started to leave the reserve and hear other people talk and them. Because, you know, they're minimum security prisons. That's how they started out. I learned that. I listened to my father and them talk about the Indian agent and the power that the Indian agent had. He told me about the time the Indian agent came with relief money, the first welfare system. And he says the men were working and stuff, you know, hunting and gardening and doing whatever to keep alive. When he came and he talked to them, they chased him off our community and said, we make our own living. We get our food with our own two hands. But they kept coming back with that money. Became welfare money. I say it's minimum security because that's where we were. And because of the racism, a lot of us weren't getting jobs out in the white world. Another justifiable thing to complain about. I tell people today Canada is the second largest land-based country in the world, and Indian reservations are 0.05% of the land mass. That's shocking. Then there's the residential schools. You know, I've mentioned that already. Another justifiable reason to complain, to do some, you know, to talk it. Then there was another trauma or another justifiable reason for us not to trust or to be angry, to be afraid, to be depressed, was the RCM police. My grandfather said to the priest when he come to the house to take my mom to residential school, my grandfather said no. Next day, the priest shows up with an Indian agent and RCMP officer. Indian agent and the priest take my mom to a residential school and they take my grandpa to jail for 6 months. That's a shocking image there. And often I forgot about my poor grandmother, who not only lost her daughter or her children to residential school, but her husband to jail. I wondered at times how that must have felt. Another justifiable reason. And so unfortunate, those ones that were keeping the peace often were violent towards our people. Because they too internalized the negative messages about Indigenous people being lazy, drunk, crazy. A lot of Canadians internalize that. Till today, that we're inferior. So, the last one that would give me justification to complain is removal. You know, I didn't hear about that until I think the 80s. Maybe later than that, because one of my friends, he said, what you up to? And he says, I'm going to look for my brothers and sisters. And I seen him, I don't know, a year or so later, I said, hey, did you ever find your brothers and sisters? I didn't even know the full story, and I didn't ask him at that time. He says, yeah, he says, because he became a social worker, so he learned how to navigate the system. He says, yeah, I got a brother and a sister down in the United States. And I have a sister in Montreal. I say, whoa. He says they don't want to come home. I know. Then I found out in the removal. The children, the babies, ended up all over in Canada and the United States and Western Europe. And I met 60 Scoop survivors. And I really feel for them because they're uprooted and flopped down somewhere in that strange culture to them, to us. Never knowing who their parents are, their real parents, and knowing they're different by the color of their skin. Some of them were raised in a good way and become professionals, but I could still see sometimes they're hurt in their eyes, the ones I've talked to.